Yep, he's here with us, just as promised, the president of Ignatius Press, Mark Brumley. And we are going to do just what we said. We're going to talk about Catholic social teaching. Our number is 888-318-7884. If you've got a question about Catholic social teaching, 888-318-7884. Ignatius Press, probably the single greatest Catholic publisher in the Alpha or Gamma quadrants. Mark Brumley used to work here in San Diego as the director of social ministry in the Diocese of San Diego, and also as a member of the Catholic Answers family. Hello again, Mark Brumley.
I still think of myself as a member of the Catholic Answers family. I just think of myself as having moved away.
That was ill put on my part. I should have said formerly on the payroll of Catholic Answers.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not on the payroll.
Because you're still a family member, of course.
I'm not an economic drain on Catholic Answers as I once was.
That's right. I just want to let you know, before we get into our conversation about whether Catholic social teaching is Marxist, I'm going to ask you that in a second. I just want you to know that the editor of the Homiletics and Pastoral Review was on in the last hour, and I just want to let you know he did a great job, because he said you're his boss.
Oh, great. Well, that's, sort of, not really, but Father Maccone, great man.
He is a great one. He's a lot of fun, too. He's not like you, though, in this regard. He is really mean to me at the breaks. You're always nice to me during the break. He's a very mean person.
Well, I think he's that way because he realizes that you have a lot of potential, and he doesn't want to. He doesn't want you to risk not realizing it. So maybe he overcompensates.
Yeah,
by
that could
aggression.
Be. That's also he's just a very funny man.
Yes.
888-318-7884. Mark Brumley, our guest, is the author of a brand new book from Catholic Answers, and we're going to be giving this book to anyone who gets on the air to talk with Mark today. The book is called 20 Answers: Catholic Social Teaching. The copies that we're sending out, the funds for that will come out of Mark's royalties, so you should understand that you are cutting into Mark's royalty, but we'll be happy to send you a free copy if you're questioning.
Oh, wait.
Yes.
Wait, what's the topic today?
Is Catholic social teaching Marxist? That's the question.
Well, maybe that's true if you're taking away my royalties.
That's right, seizing private property. That's a basic a tenet of Marxism.
I'm generously being voluntold to give away my royalties.
You're being voluntold.
I'm happy to do it.
So in a certain sense, as a matter of fact, I know that there are many people who have said this. This has been an observation since Karl Marx himself was on this earth and writing, that basically Marxism is the gospel without God. It's the same thing. It's just given in secular terms.
You can't really have the gospel without God.
Okay.
And so therefore, if Catholicism is about God, and it is, and Marxism is the gospel without God, then Marxism and Catholicism, or Marxism and Christianity, don't fit together. By the way, there's this book, not to be confused. I'm showing that the people that are not watching this, who are just hearing it on the air, I'm holding up Catholic Social Teaching, little booklet from Catholic Answers that Todd Agliolora conned me into writing. He convinced me into writing. And then in the other hand, I have Marx and Engels' basic writings on politics and philosophy.
Oh.
Don't get these confused.
No, but it looks like you've read one more than the other. Oh, I guess one of them is much newer. That's probably why you haven't read it.
This one, I read in college. And then there's this also, not to be confused with
the Catechism of the Catholic Church.
Catechism of the Catholic Church. So,
make some distinctions for me then. What is Catholic social teaching, and why? I mean, obviously, if the God is not a little matter, if a thing expels God, it's the opposite of the thing that loves God. So, but in what practical ways are Catholic social teaching and Marxism different?
Okay, so obviously Catholic social teaching is that aspect of the Catholic faith that is concerned with the proper ordering of social relations, how we live together, right?
Yeah.
And of course, from a Catholic perspective, we're going to say that the fundamental principles of Catholic social teaching are principles of the natural law. We can know these things by reflecting on what does it mean to be human, what does it mean to be living together in the world, the natural light of reason that God has given us. We can understand the basic tenets of Catholic social teaching. Now, of course, being Christian and revelation coming from God tells us more in a certain sense. It shows us really how we relate our understanding of the world and human relations that we get from reason, natural reason, how we relate that to our calling in Jesus Christ to become sons and daughters of Almighty God. So it's not as if revelation, God has revealed about himself and about ourselves in relation to him, is just kind of a secondary thing. Obviously, it's very important. So at the very heart of Catholic social teaching is what God has told us about, whether it's reason or through revelation, how we should live together. And God is at the center of that. God is the one who created us. He's the one who calls us to this destiny of being united with him. He's the one who created us not just embodied beings, but beings with a spiritual dimension. So we're more than our bodies, we're more than matter, and so on. He's the one who taught us that we are, although we're made in his image and likeness, and given all the wonderful things that come with that, we are nevertheless fallen. We've rebelled against God through sin, and therefore we need a redeemer, and that redeemer is Jesus Christ. And so through our union with Christ in faith and hope and love, through our union with Christ in baptism, through our union with Christ in through his church, we are able to be redeemed. So that's really the Catholic side of things. Now, the Marxist side of things is very different. It is also about what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to live together and so on? The Marxist answer isn't completely wrong. It's not entirely wrong. Marxism arose from, obviously, Karl Marx, who was a German political philosopher and thinker and so on, who looked reflected upon the conditions of the working class in European society, in Germany, in France, in England, and came to regard the exploitation of the poor as a grave evil. And he was right about that. Where he was wrong was to suppose that that evil, the overcoming of that evil, had nothing to do with religion, that religion and, in fact, God was part of the problem, not part of the solution, and that human beings were essentially material, and that's it. And so the solution to human suffering in the world was a materialist solution, an economic solution, how we arrange the distribution of goods in this world, and a change in consciousness. He thought that by promulgating the Marxist doctrine and by people coming to accept Marxism, that he would, that eventually, after a class struggle and the establishment of what's called the dictatorship of the proletariat of the working class in, under the state taking over, that eventually there would be a change in consciousness and people would stop thinking about themselves as individuals and would work, you know, only for the good of the common good of the, as the state defined it. And eventually we'd even see the withering away of the state. So we'd create this paradise on earth through this process. So that's how Marx saw it. Of course, Christianity says, you know, that's not going to happen. We can't do that. That's human beings can't save themselves. As terrible as the exploitation of workers is, and there's terrible exploitation at times, the solution is not Marxism. The solution is not a totalitarian state. And it's just fundamentally wrong to suppose that if you create a totalitarian state, even in the interests of human equality and justice, that human beings are going to suddenly become perfect and they're not going to abuse that power and distort human freedom. So that's where there's a basic difference.
So it almost seems to me that maybe people should be reminded of this. We should all maybe be reminded of this. That this is what the Catholic Church said in the 19th century, that this would lead to tyranny, that this would lead to the degradation of the human person and of human societies. And in the 20th century, that's what happened.
Exactly. Well, of course, it goes back to Leo XIII. The end of the 19th century in 1891, Rerum Novarum, his encyclical on the working classes and social conditions. And it's interesting that now, of course, in that document, Leo condemns socialism. We can get into the question of socialism versus Marxism, but what he has in mind is socialism that is essentially the Marxist understanding of how the economy and the political economy should be arranged. by the way, just recall, the most prominent Marxist state, that is to say, government that sought to take its principles from the philosophy of Karl Marx in the 20th century, was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Now, we can get into, all kinds of arguments of democratic socialism versus totalitarian right. socialism and all that, but let's not obscure the fact that in the 20th century, the dominant political expression of Marxism was in a socialist country, the Soviet Union. And so that's really what Leo is talking about. Again, notable, 1891, before there even existed a single socialist state in the world, when socialism was a political philosophy and a movement, Leo XIII saw its errors and condemned it. And that's been the consistent message of the Magisterium of the Catholic Church since that time.
We just want to put one other person on the side against Marxism and the Soviet system in particular. In November of 1917, the Red Army defeated the White, and we got modern communism in the Soviet Union. But in October, the month before that, guess who appeared at Fatima and asked the world to pray the rosary for Russia?
I wonder who that was.
Yeah, so there are people in high places who are aware of the vast difference between the gospel as preached by Jesus and that as offered by men like Lenin and Stalin. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back to take your questions on Catholic social teaching with Mark Brumley right after this. The number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Right back with Mark Brumley and social teaching.
Catholic Answers Live. Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio with Matthew Bunsen. Join us every week as we talk with the Register's expert writers and editors about the news you need to know, and offer authentic Catholic insights on the important stories that impact your life. Register Radio, every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern and Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Mark Brumley is our guest, which is always a treat for us here. Mark is the president of Ignatius Press, and he's got a brand new little book for us here at Catholic Answers, a little book with a lot of big ideas in it. It's called 20 Answers, Catholic Social Teaching. And we're talking about the contrast between Catholic social teaching and Marxism with Mark today. But Mark, as you were saying to me at the break, three different terms surfaced there in the beginning, so let's clarify our terms for a quick minute. One being socialism, one being Marxism, and one being communism. How do you maybe parse those?
Now, these terms are closely related. They overlap, but they don't have exactly the same meaning, okay? And you're going to have a variety of different people who identify themselves as socialists who will say, well, but I'm not a Marxist, or maybe I'm a Marxist, but I'm not a communist. So socialism usually refers to a political economic philosophy or system in which the government, the state, controls the means of production, either owns them outright or regulates them, hyper-regulates them in the interests, supposedly in the interests of the citizenship, okay? Now, there are other forms of socialism that don't – there are other uses of the term, let's say, socialism, that don't refer to that, and you get into a big linguistic dispute or semantical dispute about who's using the term accurately. For my purposes, I don't care about that. I'm talking about the economic political philosophy where the state owns the means of production or controls, hyper-regulates the means of production. That's what I mean. Marxism, what's Marxism? Well, Marxism is the philosophy of Karl Marx. And of course, Marx espoused that kind of that what I just described as socialism. But he had a philosophy that sought to justify that socialism. It was a materialist philosophy. That is to say, it was the idea that only matter exists. There is no such thing as spirit. There is no God. In fact, God is not only non-existent, but the idea of God has been used by religion and other forces in society to keep people from realizing how terrible their situation is. You know, the idea that, well, you can endure the sufferings of this life. Don't worry about that, because when they're over, you're going to get to go to heaven. So this is the idea that religion is a kind of an opiate, or it's like a drug that is used in such a way that it makes people feel like, well, I can put up with this. Now, in Marx's philosophy, he wants a class struggle. He wants a conflict between the bourgeoisie, between the owners of, you know, the owning class in society, the capitalists, and the workers. And of course, so then religion, if it's telling people, well, you know, things will be better in the next life, is regarded by Marx as diminishing the likelihood of that class conflict or that class struggle. And so Marx is opposed to that. Anyway, Marxism then is a particular way of understanding socialism and a particular way of getting to the socialist goal. Communism. Well, the word communism is often used to refer to the end goal of Marxism or the socialist society. Again, Marx held that there would be this socialist state, and that over time, people, citizens of the socialist state, would eventually have a change in consciousness, and the state would, as he said, wither away. It would disappear, wouldn't need it anymore, because everybody just would be looking out for the good of the community. Well, that end goal, where everybody's looking out for the good of the community, and, you know, without God, without religion, without any notion of genuine charity, that end goal is communism. So we've kind of explained those three terms and how they're interrelated to one another.
Mark Brumley, our guest, our number 888-318-7884. Mark has a brand new book for us here at Catholic Answers called Catholic Social Teaching, 20 Answers Catholic Social Teaching. A whole bunch of folks on the line for you, Mark. Shall we get into a conversation?
Sure.
All right. Let's go
for it.
Let's go to Glenn in Portland, Oregon. I'm going to have to refrain from making smart aleck remarks about certain American cities while we're talking about socialism. So, Mark, in Portland, Oregon, a perfectly respectable American city, listening on Modern Day Radio, you are next. Your question for Mark.
Okay, this is actually Glenn.
Oh, Glenn, I apologize. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Real quick, I was laughing. It was a while ago. Somebody called in and was saying something about different things they get from Catholic Answers, and the guy said, and even Trent's book was helpful, and you were cracking up, and I just thought that was really hilarious.
Yeah, it is impressive when even Trent Horn is helpful. We're doing a good job then.
He's working in it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Glenn.
And I've been loving Ignatius Press. I read, was it The Father Elijah? There's several books. That
oh,
great.
Good for you. That's some good stuff. Yes.
Michael O'Brien, yeah.
I love it. But in fact, I've read several of your books anyway. But real quick, so with all that's going on and all the craziness with, you know, churches getting burned and statues pulled down, and I'm a brand new Catholic. I just came into church about a month and a half ago. Answers to that, so thank you all. But question is, like, what is Catholics' response, especially for men, as far as, you know, defending, protecting? I've heard everything from grab your rosary to grab your gun, you know. What would you say is a good Catholic men's response to helping, you know, kind of protect not the buildings and the people?
Okay.
I certainly would say we should be praying. That's a given. We should always be praying. When you're talking about church property, I mean, people look at this in different ways. And this is Mark Brumley's take on it, you know. the buildings and the property of the church in themselves are not so important. Obviously, what's important is people that make up the church. Nevertheless, you know, we need places to gather. We need places to engage in teaching the faith. We need physical places in which to help the poor and relieve people in need. And so when somebody damages a church, they bring about a cost to that community. And while, you know, it may not affect me, you know, there are plenty of other people, and I don't mean this to be stereotypical, but this is actually an example of a real person. You know, a little old lady was in communication with me on Facebook, of all things, messaged me when this business of churches being attacked and tabernacles being stolen and statues being damaged began, and she was terrified. Little old lady, you know, never did anybody any harm, just going to church, and she started fearing for her life. So, yeah, you know, people can glibly sit back and say, well, we shouldn't be concerned about the property, and these are probably people who have been exploited, and they, in ignorance, are taking out their aggression against the church. We should be loving and forgiving toward them. Of course we should be loving and forgiving, but it's not as if by trying to protect that church building or that church property, you're valuing property over people. No, because there are people whose lives are affected by what happens to that property. So that's an important point. And another point is we should only as a last resort take the means of force into our own hands. We should expect law enforcement to use reasonable force in protecting the property of people as well as people in their property. And where that's not happening, we need to hold local authorities accountable. Now, sometimes things happen beyond their control, but when we have instances of violence breaking out and looting breaking out and things of that sort, where people, not just property, but people as well as property, are vulnerable and subject to attack, we have to hold law enforcement responsible. We have to say, you guys need to be out there. And if local political authority, whether it's the mayor or someone else, is preventing law enforcement from protecting people and protecting their property, then we need to hold those people accountable. That's what the rule of law is all about. We don't let people just do whatever they want. Even when people have valid grievances, when there's been an injustice, as there was in the case of George Floyd, that doesn't mean all bets are off. People are then free to express themselves however they want. Now, I know lots of peaceful protesters. We don't want to say anybody who expresses, you know, civil dissatisfaction or civil or actions of protest in public against that or other injustices, you know, those are automatically looters and people of that sort. That's, of course, not true. But we do know that there were plenty of people who were engaging in violence against persons and damaging property, and they need to be held accountable because people's lives are impacted by this. So that's what I'd say.
Glenn, thank you. Lots of folks on the line. I'm going to keep going. Walt in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, listening on the TuneIn app. You are next. Walt, your question for Mark Brumley.
Mark, why does this idea of Cardinal Bernard in the seamless garment keep cropping up every election year amongst certain Catholics? I mean, it's been a kind of complete disaster for unborn children to say that if somebody is for more government largesse or universal health care or against the death penalty, then that or they're more pro-life than somebody that maybe against those I have a different attitude about those things, which are prudential judgments. Nevertheless, they're considered not as pro-life because they're not for these other things, even though the person who's for the so-called seamless garment stuff is for cutting the heads off babies.
Mark, the seamless garment.
Okay, so here's what I'd say. I make a distinction, and I know not everybody agrees with this distinction, but I make a distinction between what's called a consistent life ethic or a consistent ethic of life and what's sometimes called the seamless garment. Now, what is a consistent ethic of life? That means that we should be consistent in our ethic, in our moral attitude, in our moral action when it comes to the dignity of human life. Whenever human life is threatened, doesn't matter whether it's in the beginning of human life in the womb, or it's at the end of life as we get older, or at any stage of development in between, or any condition of dependence in between. Whenever human life is at stake, to be consistent, if we are genuinely valuing human life because we believe it is a gift from God and there's an inherent dignity in the human person, to be consistent, we need to be responsible and defend and protect and safeguard that human life. Okay, that's what I would say is a consistent ethic of life. Seamless garment, we'll have to take that when we come back, won't we?
Yeah, we will, Mark. Thanks. Walt, hang on if you don't mind. We'll get to the second part of Mark's answer, the part about the seamless garment, when we come back. We're talking with Mark Brumley about Catholic social teaching, in part because Mark has a brand new book for Catholic Answers called 20 Answers, Catholic Social Teaching. Anybody who gets on the air with Mark gets a free copy today, 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
What does the sacrament of confirmation do? Is there any such thing as Catholic economics? These are the kinds of questions we ask on our free podcast, Catholic Answers Focus, and you should be a subscriber. In fact, we tackle both of these questions this week. On Monday's episode, Father Hugh Barber explains the sacrament of confirmation as you've never heard it explained before. And on Wednesday, I get to interview Trent Horn on Catholic economics. Find these episodes and tons of other episodes at CatholicAnswersFocus.com or listen to Catholic Answers Focus wherever you get your podcasts.
What are the basic teachings of Islam? How does the Quran compare with the Bible? Does Islam really encourage violence in God's name, or is it a religion of peace? In 20 Answers Islam, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, taking a look inside Islam to reveal what its own theological authorities teach and cutting through the ignorance and wishful thinking that are too common in our culture. 20 Answers Islam is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory Team contrasts Margaret Sanger and Our Lady of Mount Carmel.
Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Talking Catholic social teaching and Marxism with Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press. And Walt is on the line from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, and was asking about the whole idea of the seamless garment. And Walt saying this seamless garment as an image has not been a helpful one. He thinks it's contributed to confusion as far as Catholic public witness has gone. But you were making a distinction between two things, Mark.
Right. So we talked about a consistent life ethic. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about seamless garment, the image. Of course, I'm looking at my book here, you know, Catholic Social Teaching, where it talks about the seamless garment. And that's obviously taken from John chapter 19, verse 23, where Jesus' robe is described as a seamless garment. And the original idea behind the seamless garment image, the metaphor, was the idea of consistency, that, you know, we should be consistent in our approach to issues touching on the dignity of human life. I think that's fine, and that's even good and appropriate. The difficulty is that the issues involved are sometimes very different. So should we be concerned if there are hungry people in America? Absolutely. Why? Because people deserve food, and they need food to live, and if we believe in the dignity of human life, we're going to be concerned about hungry people in America. Yes. But does that – because I support a particular government program to feed hungry people, does that equate to you know, opposition to abortion? Are those on the same level? And some people, not everybody who uses seamless garment language, but some people who use seamless garment language, at the very least, convey the idea that unless you agree with them on all of these political issues, not just that they're important, but how they actually go about protecting human life, then you're not consistent. You don't have a consistent life ethic. And then if you're not consistent on all those points, then you're, you know, if you're in talking about a politician, if this politician is not dubbed consistent and this politician is not dubbed consistent, well, then we can really choose. There are choices between them pretty much equal because they're both inconsistent. Well, you know, that way of looking at things fails to take into consideration that there could be gradations, and some evils are worse than others, and some situations are much more complex and admit of a variety of equally acceptable approaches from a Catholic perspective. And so that's why I like to quote Gaudium et Spes 43, which says, often the Christian view of things will itself suggest some specific solution in certain circumstances. So, for example, abortion, you know, there's no Christian way to approve of abortion. Unborn children have a right to life, period, end of discussion. But he goes on to say, yet it happens rather frequently and legitimately so that with equal sincerity, some faithful disagree with others on a given matter. So there are some issues Catholics can disagree about. Even against the intentions of their proponents, however, solutions proposed on one side or another may be easily confused by many people with the gospel message. Hence, it is necessary for people to remember that no one is allowed in the aforementioned situations to appropriate the church's authority for his opinion. They should always try to enlighten one another through honest discussion, preserving mutual charity, and caring above all for the common good. So what is this saying? It's saying that on some issues, there is a Catholic position. And then on other issues, there are Catholic principles and goals and goods that we all have to affirm as Catholics, but we can have reasonable differences of opinion how to approach things. And one problem with some people who espouse the seamless garment, and they use that language when they what they really should be talking about is a consistent life ethic, one problem is they treat their positions on these very contingent, debatable propositions as if they are things that all Catholics have to agree upon, and if you don't agree with them, you're not being consistent, and that's a big problem.
Walt, thank you for that insightful and helpful question. Our number is 888-3187-884. Mark Brumley, our guest. We're talking about Catholic social teaching and Marxism. We've already answered the question about whether Catholic social teaching is Marxist, so we can move on from having established a ground there. But your questions on Catholic social teaching, or certainly on its relationship with Marxism, socialism, are welcome. 888-3187-884. Up next is Trooper in Lakeway, Texas, listening on 88.5 FM out of Marble Falls. Trooper, your question for Mark Brumley.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I have a question about the French Revolution and how it might tie in with communism. But you and Si were talking about, I thought you were talking about a book that talked about the September massacres and all the priests and people that were put to death by the bayonet. And you can go to this chapel and the blood is on the walls there.
This is actually really fortuitous that you mentioned this right now, because the man who mentioned that book was actually Chris Check in a conversation we had the other day. A book about the killings, the September killings in the French Revolution. Can you give us okay, that's the name of the book?
That's what we're talking about.
No, the book, I don't know what book I recommended, but there's an excellent history of the genocide in the Vendée. Maybe that's what we were talking about.
I think it might be, yeah.
Oh, I'll find the guy's name.
We'll get the name before we let you go, Trooper. We'll see if we can it'll come up. But I think that's what you're referring to, because we had that conversation earlier last week. But I want to let you continue with your question about the French Revolution for Mark.
Right. Well, that got me going. I bought one book on it, and I've got my mother's books, and to me, it seems like a pre-Marxist, a kind of a communist thing. And I'm beginning to wonder who were the actual victims. You know, we were always told it was the elite and snotty ruling class, but evidently it was not just them. And what was it kind of like a communist takeover?
Well, it certainly was the case that the crimes of the French Revolution were not limited to the aristocracy or the monarchy. A lot of other people were killed, and a lot of priests and women religious and just ordinary people who were just trying to live a good life were victims. The French Revolution is a complex phenomenon. I'm not an expert in the history of the French Revolution, but I do think that there is an element in it that that has links to what you see in the communist revolution in Russia in 1917. There's a radical egalitarianism, the idea that human equality requires a kind of leveling of everybody, and that it's the purpose of that the state will enforce this leveling of equality, and that the state will enforce the regulation of liberty. The idea that liberty means what the state says it means in the interests of equality. And that common brotherhood, we'd say brother and sisterhood today, but you get what I mean. Traditional gender-inclusive brotherhood, that means we're all fundamentally equal, that this is, again, this is to be enforced by the state in such a way that it suppresses the freedom and dignity of the individual. Now, there were some folks involved with the French Revolution early on who didn't espouse that radical notion, but very quickly, as often happens in these political revolutions, extremists and people with all kinds of authoritarian issues and problems took over. One of the concerns I have when we see civil unrest in our day, many people who are out protesting are certainly well-intentioned and may have just things to criticize, but other people often take advantage of periods of civil unrest, and then they come in and they do things, as we're seeing happening now, with people being attacked and property being vandalized and churches being attacked. People come in and take advantage of the situation, and pretty soon you have a repressive system, whether it's a de facto regime or not. And so that's what happened in the French Revolution. It certainly did lay the foundations for Marx and Marxist ideas and later socialist ideas of communist revolution. And don't want to reduce the French Revolution to that, but certainly there were elements of the French Revolution that contributed to that notion.
Reminiscent of an even earlier revolution, which we refer to as the building of the Tower of Babel.
That's exactly right.
Trooper, we haven't been able to get that title for you. Will you send me an email maybe at radio? Just send it to radio@catholic.com. That's our email address, and I'll send you the title of that book when I get it from Chris Check. Is that all right, Trooper?
Yeah, that'd be great, man. I've been really, because I got one book that touched on it, but not like y'all were talking about.
Yeah, that was we had that conversation with Todd Aglioloro and Chris Check about the current crisis, and I remember Chris making that reference. So those two will come up with the title for you. I'll just have to send it to you. radio@catholic.com, by the way. You can send the email there. As a matter of fact, anybody that ever wants to get in touch with us, you can always send us an email at radio@catholic.com. We got to take a quick break. Before I send you off to the break, I do want to let you know that Mark Brumley's book that we've been talking about this hour, 20 Answers Catholic Social Teachings, on sale for $1 a copy. You can get it for $1, come on, through midnight tonight at shop.catholic.com. Midnight tonight, I happen to know there's not going to be anybody there at the computer at midnight to turn it off. So if it's after midnight and you order, you're still going to get the dollar off. Get the dollar deal. So you just go to shop.catholic.com and get Mark Brumley's brand new book, 20 Answers Catholic Social Teaching, for just $1.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Reynald Secher, which is spelled S-E-C-H-E-R, wrote a book called A French Genocide. It's from the University of Notre Dame Press. That's the book that Chris had recommended before. So if our listener is listening, A French Genocide from University of Notre Dame Press. But also send me that email and I'll make sure I get it to you. Mark Brumley is our guest. He's the author of 20 Answers Catholic Social Teaching from Catholic Answers. We're doing pretty well, don't you think, Mark? This is the show. This is going really well this hour.
Yeah, no? You know, you've not said anything heretical, and I haven't said anything heretical. It's a good hour.
I feel like that's a good hour if I don't say anything heretical. Or even I don't even think I've been mildly annoying, which is much more common.
You are never mildly annoying.
Oh, yes, I am. Come on. Well, thank you for saying it. Let's go to John in Champaign, Illinois. It's such a great town. They named it after a fancy drink. He's listening on 95.7. John in Champaign, Illinois, your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi there. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm very impressed with the conversation so far. So
thank you.
Thank you for having me on. So my question is with regards to Marxism, and the discussion so far has focused primarily on state intervention on behalf of workers. And so my question is, how would Catholic or even Christian teachings be reconciled with worker cooperatives, where instead of the state owning the means of production on behalf of workers, that workers would directly, democratically decide? So the workers would co-own a business and democratically organize businesses that way.
Perfectly legitimate. It's perfectly legitimate because the people involved, the workers involved, are free to enter into an agreement with one another to own together the business that they do. And I know of many co-ops, Catholic-inspired or Christian-inspired co-ops, perfectly legitimate thing to do, perfectly consistent as a concept. I mean, however it might happen to be worked out in any particular instance, but as a concept, it's perfectly consistent with Catholic social teaching.
And would you say then that for people who are advocating for a more equal society, would you say that it might be better for them to focus on worker cooperatives since they reconcile better with Christianity and the Catholic Church rather than maybe a more bureaucratic, top-down state way of socialism?
Sure, absolutely. Well, of course, again, In a co-op, you know, you have a group of people who have ownership stake in that company. So it's a shared ownership. It's a form of private property. I mean, it's tied. In my property in a co-op is my share and my participation in that co-op. That's a form of private property. It's a form of widely distributed ownership, perfectly compatible with Catholic teaching. It avoids one of the difficulties and many problems with socialism. Well, one of the problems with socialism, as I described it or defined it earlier, is that you do have this bureaucratic structure. You have overregulation. You have a violation of what in the Catholic teaching is called the principle of subsidiarity. And so there are lots of problems with socialism above and beyond the materialist forms of it. I mean, we know there are non-materialist forms of it. But what you're describing with respect to co-ops is great, and I think I'm supportive of it. I actually know of people who operate from a co-op model, so I think it's very commendable. There are other models that are akin to a co-op model. You have forms of distributism sometimes take on the form of co-op models and things of that sort. So these are all things, or they're alternative ways of organizing people when it comes to means of production.
And there used to be a thing called guilds, and now in school we're taught that the destruction of the European guild societies was a great advance for society. I wonder if that's all true too.
Well, I mean, there were advantages and disadvantages of, you know, medieval guilds.
Yeah.
And but one of the things that was an advantage, and you have this to some degree carried over in trade unions and things of that sort, is that you had a system whereby people in a particular profession not only trained one another and guaranteed a certain quality in performance of the services and provision of the goods associated with that guild or that trade, but you also had opportunities for jobs and employment and support that were, again, part of a kind of Christian concern for one another that didn't require domination by the state. So,
John, is that a conversation all satisfying to you?
That is great. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll be tuning in more. This is my first time tuning in, so... have a great day.
Oh, this is not even one of our top 10 guests, John.
Really, man. I'm like, yeah. I'm like on a 1 to 10, I'm maybe at 11.7.
Yeah. Come on. You definitely got to tune in again. Thanks, John. I'm Mark Brumley. I hope people know I'm only kidding. You are one of our top 10 guests.
They know it. They know you wouldn't have me back all the time.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess that's true. Thanks again, John. I'm glad we won you over as a listener. Let's go to Carissa in Chile, watching on YouTube Live. Delighted to have you, Carissa. Sorry to keep you waiting. Are you there? Do we have? I have our online one. Is that not right? I apologize, Carissa. Are you there in Chile?
Can you hear me?
I can. I had pushed the wrong button. I apologize. Your question for Mark.
My question is actually about slavery, which is kind of similar. I just wanted to know what the Catholic teaching is, because I was having a discussion with a fellow Catholic, and they said that it's not intrinsically evil, but I had been taught that it was. So I just wanted to know whether it is or not and what counts as slavery. Like, they were using the example of community service, but I would say that's not slavery. So I just wanted to know.
Okay, well, this is a whole question we could spend a whole hour on. It is true that in the past, the Catholic Church and societies, influenced by Christianity more generally, sometimes made a distinction between involuntary servitude as a punishment for crime, and other forms of involuntary servitude. So your friend may be talking about that. You know, he talks about community service. That's an example. If you commit a crime, you're compelled by law to do something that you would not do. You're compelled by law to do it against your will. In the past, it wouldn't just be community service, right? You could be required to do hard labor. And even to a certain extent, if you put someone in prison, you compel them to be in a particular place against their consent. There is a certain commonality between that and slavery. That's okay. There's a difference between that, though, and what we commonly think of slavery. And this difference, the church has only articulated with precision over time. And so, in the Western European experience, in America, we had what's called chattel slavery, where people claimed a right to another person's labor as a property right. So if I owned a slave, I claimed I had a right to that man's labor. It wasn't exactly as if he were wholly a piece of property, because I couldn't, you know, under the old slavery laws, do whatever I couldn't kill him, for example. I couldn't do whatever I wanted with him according to the law. Now, we know, you know, oftentimes even, you know, that minimal level of safeguard was not in fact practiced. But under the law, I couldn't just kill a slave at my, you know, on my own volition. Nevertheless, the claim was that I, you know, I could, as a slave owner, have a right to his labor in property. And the church has said that's not correct. That's false, because that demeans the dignity of that person. And it tends to treat him, whatever we say about a distinction between him as property and a distinction between his labor and property, it tends toward treating him as if he were a possession. And it's certainly the case that people are not naturally, their labor is not naturally the property of someone else. And the whole rationale that sought to justify this horrible thing is completely false, and it's egregious. So that when the church in the modern context articulates her teaching regarding the dignity of the human person, she says that slavery, understood in that latter sense that I've just described, is intrinsically evil. There is not a circumstance where it's ever legitimate to treat somebody simply because this person is a human being and is regarded by us as being inferior in some way, as if his labor were something to which we are entitled as a matter of property, that he can then be bought and sold. His labor can be bought and sold. His person can be transported to someone else who has bought and allegedly bought and sold his labor, that is demeaning to the human person and is incompatible with Christian teaching. Unfortunately, in the 14th century, after slavery in that sense had been virtually eliminated in the Western world, due in no small part to Christianity's influence in the Middle Ages, it was reintroduced, the discovery of trade with the African continent, and chattel slavery was reintroduced into the Western world at that time, and had a corrupting effect on Christianity, a corrupting effect on Christians and the church. Although there were early popes who condemned the slave trade, nevertheless, there were churchmen, there were church leaders, there were religious orders, there were individual Catholic people who participated in it, and it was wrong. And maybe they didn't fully understand how wrong it was, but whether they fully understood how wrong it was or not, it was wrong.
Carissa, how's that? Is that clear for you?
And so, I mean, you mentioned chattel
slavery. Yes.
And that's what my friend had mentioned. So is the slavery where it's like community service, is that still okay?
I think that that's an abuse of the word slavery, because it muddies the water. It's true to say that criminals, people who commit crimes, violate the rights of other people and break the laws of society and do damage to society, can, for certain crimes, be compelled to do things against their will, like pay a fine or undergo imprisonment or undergo community service. It's not as if they're saying, yeah, we want to do this. This is great. I mean, there may be some people who are repentant and do that, but criminals as such don't do that. They are compelled. They are forced by do. But they deserve it because they've committed crimes, and this is a way of repaying it. It's not slavery in the sense in which we use the term today, and to use it that way only confuses people.
Carissa, thanks so much for that call from Chile. Mike in Seattle, I'm sorry we weren't able to get to you, but we are out of time. Mark Brumley has been our guest. His brand new book is 20 Answers Catholic Social Teaching from Catholic Answers Press, and it's on sale for $1 a copy right now at shop.catholic.com. Till midnight tonight, $1 a copy for Mark's brand new book, Catholic Social Teaching. Mark Brumley, I can't believe it's
Thank
over
you,
already.
Sir.
Thank you. That was really fun. I love when you're on. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And likewise. God bless you, man.
You're probably top 10. Come on. I don't want to leave that sour taste in your mouth.
All right. I accept. I'll accept that.
2 hours of open forum, Jimmy Akin, God willing, tomorrow right here on Catholic Answers Live.